Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys, if you don't mind, I'd like to share something from my son. Mm-hmm. I'm very proud of my 3.5-year-old son, Arlo. And as we know, Mother's Day is on Sunday, so shout out to all the moms out there. So Arlo did a project at school all about my mom. So there were some prompts, and looking at the handwriting on this, it's clearly written by one of his teachers. So I just want to share the work that my son did talking about my wife, his mama. My mom is 15 years old.
Okay.
My mom's favorite thing to do is play. That's nice.
Yeah.
She does like to play. My mom's job is work on her computer at the hospital.
Yeah.
Also true. My mom's favorite color is pink, which is accurate. Uh-huh. My mom's favorite thing to eat is lettuce. I do like a big salad.
So mom's a 15-year-old lettuce eater.
Yes. My mom
so
makes
she
the
part
best.
Rabbit.
Exactly.
My mom makes the best mac and cheese. My mom loves when I play. My mom always says, take a bath, which is true. And I love my mom's food. That's very sweet, Arlo. I'm very proud of you, buddy. But when my wife sent this to me this morning, and I saw my mom's favorite thing to eat is lettuce, I just started laughing uncontrollably.
Hey, that's kids for you, man.
Yes.
That's all she eats is lettuce. Lettuce. But listen.
I like a big salad.
But all he sees is lettuce. He don't see anything else in there. He just sees lettuce. Green stuff. Eat your lettuce, Arlo. Eat your lettuce. That's all he knows.
That was an episode of Seinfeld, wasn't it, Willie? The big salad?
The big salad. Yeah, that was a big one.
Yes, I do like a big salad. So I'm proud of you, buddy.
Happy Good job.
Happy early Mother's Day to all of the moms out there.
Good job, Arlo.
We have an interesting development in the world of college football. So this morning, Derek Mason, you sent us a graphic from Yahoo Sports, and the big word on the bottom was banned, B-A-N-N-E-D, because according to a report from Pablo Torre, who you may remember from his time at ESPN, he has his own podcast now called Pablo Torre Finds Out. According to Pablo Torre on this podcast, Jordan Hudson, the girlfriend of Bill Belichick, is banned from North Carolina's football facility. Well, North Carolina has since disputed that notion with this statement, quote, "While Jordan Hudson is not an employee at the university or Carolina Athletics, she is welcome to the Carolina football facilities." An athletic department spokesperson said in a statement, noting there were false reports, quote unquote, about her role. Jordan will continue to manage all activities related to Coach Belichick's personal brand outside of his responsibilities for Carolina football and the university. And now Pablo Torre is disputing North Carolina's disputing.
of the
report
exactly.
That he had. He says, quote, "P.S. UNC can now choose to describe or change its position on Jordan Hudson's involvement however it wishes. Following the publication of our episode, we requested comment and filed dozens of FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, requests that were not satisfied. And we stand by the specific reporting in our episode, which came from the highest levels of the football program." So if you didn't think this story was messy enough, Willie Donick, it's just gotten a little bit messier.
Well, I mean, this is what Bill Belichick wants, right? He likes the attention. He knows it's coming. I'm sure when Torre came out with his thing, somebody from the Belichick camp said, we've got to put out something. And look, I suspect that Pablo Torre's sources are dead on, that there is at least, you know, remember, there's a lot of people that work in the athletic program, right? And a lot of people might have one version of a ban, right? And it's not maybe broadcast for the whole school to see.
It's a soft ban. Yes. It's not a hard ban. It's a soft ban.
It could be a soft ban, right? Like the people who know. But It may be not official. There's enough wiggle room that they could put that statement out. But now let's see what happens next. I'm very curious to see how Pablo Torre's sources now fill in Pablo Torre, the details of what transpired since he put that out there on the podcast.
By the way, Derek, also according to Pablo Torre, and I started listening to this episode this morning. I have not completed it, but so far so good, so I recommend it. In the podcast, he says from a Belichick family source, quote, "There is deep worry for how detrimental Jordan can be for not just North Carolina, but Bill's legacy and reputation, everything he has built and worked for over decades."
Listen, if this is what he wants, then by golly, let him have it. If he wants it, and listen, his family knows better than any one of us. And if they believe that, you know, what is transpiring is hurting Bill's legacy, then it's okay. Somebody intervene then. Stop talking about it. Be about it. Get in there and intervene if that's the case. But I get it. I understand, you know, getting yourself involved in relationships. That's kind of, you know, hard to do, especially if someone, you know, has true affections for the person. They can't, you know, they're blind to some of the things that may be happening. But hey, listen, you know, y'all know how I feel about it. It gives me the ick. But anything beside that, I mean, whatever comes of this, this is Bill's doing. That's all I can say. Whatever comes
right
of it, this is his doing. This is what he wants. He's not getting back in the NFL now. He's not.
See, we get into semantics. If you really pick apart the statement by the University of North Carolina, she's not officially an employee of the university.
So we rather
but they
you stay
concede,
out.
They concede that she's overseeing all of the Bill Belichick things that are not directly involved. Like, that's the loose term, the branding. So there's no correlation between the branding outside of the program and inside the program. It's all branding, is it not?
No, it is.
But that's their little lane that they're going to try to stay in to make this work. And I guess they're saying, you know what, we can't have her not allowed to come in here. They should have a big public thing of her trying to enter the building and somebody telling her she can't come in.
Hey, you can't come in, excuse me.
Like that viral.
You see that poster right there? That's your face. You can't come in here.
Like that viral clip, I guess it was from Hard Knocks, of someone trying to enter the building and the door was locked.
Jalen
it was
Adams.
At the Jets.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, that's what should happen.
But, Jamal Adams, my bad.
But I was listening. Former Tennessee Titans great Jamal Adams for about
all of 5 minutes.
5 minutes. But as I was listening to this podcast, Pablo Torre finds out Katie Nolan was on the episode, and Katie Nolan, a prominent sports personality as well. She was talking about, do you think that Bill Belichick went to the university and said, hey, can you make it sound like she's banned? Like, don't tell her it came from me, but I don't want her here. Can you say she's banned so that I can say to her, honey, I wanted you there. I want you to be there. They told me I couldn't have you there. Yeah. I have nothing to do
it's
with
Bubba.
That.
It's Bubba. Bubba wouldn't let you in. The athletic director, he's so mean. He won't let you come in. Katie is a very sharp, clever person. I like her.
Yeah, so I'm wondering about this. One texter on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, this situation reminds me of the boomer that gets their info stolen because someone on the phone told them they needed it.
Hey, I need your information. Oh, okay, here it is. So everything without even asking questions. Here you go. But it is what it is.
Kevin on our text line says, I mean, am I crazy or what? She's responsible for his damn branding? How much more can a person be branded? She's screwing up his branding is all she's doing. That's Kevin on our text line.
Listen, you are Bill Belichick. Your branding has already been branded. You're not you going on, you know, these television, doing these hits for shows and being part of you know, networks. Your brand is already your brand, Bill.
And
I don't think you're going to get away from that.
And I know this sort of slipped through the cracks because most people who watched that CBS Sunday morning interview were focused on the part where Jordan Hudson interjects when the interviewer asks about their relationship. The man was wearing a ripped sweatshirt during an interview for CBS Sunday Morning. That's his brand.
Exactly.
The ripped sweatshirts and the sleeveless hoodies.
He got
all
a
of
brand.
That stuff.
He has a brand. Yes. So what are you – I don't want – he may be too far along in the game to try to rebrand himself. Let me phrase it that way. He may be too far along in the game to be having a 22-year-old, however old she is, trying to rebrand him. To who? What age group? Who are you trying to? You are like seriously, Willie. Who is she trying to rebrand him to?
That's been my question all along. Is Bill Belichick has to, if he's going with this, right? Mm-hmm. If he is rational about this, he's not thinking with something outside of his brain. I would think the mastermind football coach would be saying, "This is going to help me get good players to North Carolina." That's exactly the only conclusion I can reach if he's being rational about this.
How?
So you must think that. That's a great question. I don't know. Is this helping him get players?
Man, there's coming because you're Bill Belichick. That's why they're coming.
That is a saying that's out there, right? There's no such thing as bad publicity. Does that apply here?
Well, if he wants to get back into the NFL, this may not be the best publicity he can get.
That's a whole other question.
If he's trying to get
back to the NFL, then I agree with you. If he's trying to get attention to North Carolina, he's succeeding in that.
Man, Bill, I hope I don't get like this when I'm 70-something years old. I pray to God. I'm just not looking for it. I pray to God my kids still want to hang around me. I have a bunch of grandkids and stuff like that. Man, because he's just, whew. But it's his doing.
I should note that Jordan Hudson is scheduled to compete in the Miss Maine pageant beginning Saturday.
Oh, wow.
And that she was first runner-up in the pageant last year. So good luck to Jordan Hudson.
She may win this time.
In the Miss Maine pageant.
She may win this time.
She could.
Yeah.
I don't know. I this story just continues.
This is going to be a
30 for 30 one day.
Yeah. This is
the day in, day out operations. It's the summer now. Remember, it's a little more laid back. Now there's actually no time on a calendar that a football player isn't supposed to be on campus and probably doing stuff every day. The 20-hour rule or whatever doesn't apply. You don't get to go home. You're basically, I don't want to use the term slave, but whatever the next thing down is, I mean, you're beholden to the university year round. Mm-hmm. When you're a college football player, it is sad. You have no life outside of football. Football is your life, especially because you're making money so they can mm-hmm. justify it. It's still more laid back, D-Mace, I would say, probably in the summer than it's going to be when you get to August.
Oh, absolutely.
So day in and day out, what is it going to be like when the season really gets going? They start practice, mm-hmm. and she's around. Where is she going to be at practice every day?
I mean, listen.
I assume she is, right?
Yeah,
she's in charge of the branding.
In what capacity?
Does she just have her own film crew
that
films Bill? Like, how does that work alongside of she's not an official employee? This is every day there are people in that department, I'm sure, that are asking these questions.
Yeah.
It'll be fine for the next month or two,
but when it gets down to
the real work, yes.
I mean, I'm going to grab my popcorn and watch the University of North Carolina Athletic Department implode. You know, I'm not bothered by this at all. I find it incredibly...
Get Adam a seat. You know, they have those things that you wheel up. You know, they raise you up at the top of the stadium so you can watch everything.
Yes.
That's where Adam wants to be, with a big Duke sweatshirt on.
With his popcorn.
He's going to be sitting there with binoculars on.
You go, Jordan!
Get him, Jordan! Get him!
Oh, man. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Scott Wheeler, one of the Athletics NHL draft prospect analysts. He will join us coming up next to discuss the NHL draft lottery and what the Predators could do with the number 5 overall pick. So we will talk to Scott Wheeler coming up next, 615-737-1025. 1025. Tune into 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on the Norfolk Tides. Pregame begins at 6:20 and the first pitch is at 6:35. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan joined on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com by Scott Wheeler of The Athletic, one of The Athletic's top NHL draft analysts. Hi, Scott. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So I was reading your latest mock draft at The Athletic, and you have the Nashville Predators with the 5th overall pick taking James Hagans, the center out of Boston College. Now, I think every mock draft that I have read since the NHL draft lottery earlier this week has had the Predators taking Hagans at number 5, which, honestly, I was surprised by because I thought Hagans would be gone by number 5. What are you hearing about how the top of the draft is going to shake out, and why do you think Hagans would be a great fit for the Predators if they drafted him at 5?
Well, I think if Hagans doesn't go very early, i.e. if he doesn't go first or second overall, I don't see the teams that are selecting 3rd and 4th overall as natural fits. I'm just not convinced that he's the right guy for the Chicago Blackhawks, for example. Hagans is a 5'10", 5'11 center. The Blackhawks have a lot of 5'10", 5'11 skilled, fast players within their group at the moment. He just doesn't feel like a fit to me. I think they go with a little bit more size at number 3 in Chicago. And that leads me to Nashville. I think there's a chance that James Hagans does, in fact, go 1st or 2nd overall. I think the Islanders will consider him. Obviously, he's a local Long Island boy. I would fully expect that at the NHL scouting combine in Buffalo in a couple of weeks that he's going to pitch his case to the Islanders organization as to why he's the right fit for them and why he wants to play for them and be a 10, 15, 20-year player for them kind of thing. As far as the Preds go, I think there are some other natural fits there. They've drafted the competitive type over and over again in terms of the forwards that they've gone after and targeted. You think of Igor Surin a year ago, Zachary LaRue, even Teddy Stiga. You go down the list. They clearly have a type, and there are some players in that range who sort of fit the competitive mold that the Predators have coveted in the past, whether that's winger Porter Martone, center Brady Martin, even center Jake O'Brien to a little bit lesser degree than Martin, but still has that competitive, well-rounded, two-way style of game. But this is an opportunity for them to secure in Nashville a true playmaking high-end talent. The last time they drafted 5th overall, they took an American star by the name of Seth Jones. And I think this is another opportunity for them to do the same. Take an American kid, a star, true sort of high skill, high points guy. That's what you're looking at if you're going to take James Hagans. He maybe doesn't have the size of some of the other forwards that are available in that range. But I think they've longed in Nashville for that premium skill player up front. Obviously, Philip Forsberg has represented that for them. But they could use another player of that kind of point totals sort of projection, if you will. And I think that's what James Hagans is capable of. So if I'm them, I'd be hard-pressed to pass up on the skill and playmaking of James Hagans. They will also be familiar with him. They drafted Teddy Stiga, who I mentioned off the top, a year ago in the 2nd round. Well, Teddy Stiga was a line mate at the NTDP with James Hagans and was also a frequent line mate with him at Boston College this season. So they'll be well-versed in James Hagans and everything he offers.
Along those lines, Scott, back at the beginning of this year, you did your annual prospect pool rankings of every team in the NHL, and you had the Predators at number 8 in your 2025 rankings. And you noted in your story that the Predators are a difficult team to slot, because their top prospect, Tanner Mullendijk, is probably the least exciting among the top 10 pools in the league, but they're also the only team in the league with 9 first-round picks in their pool. So now, a few months removed from that, how would you analyze the Predators prospect pool? Because Barry Trotz is putting a lot of faith in players like Tanner Mullendijk and Matthew Wood and David Edstrom to be the next generation for this organization. How confident should he be that those players, among others, can indeed be that next generation?
I think Barry Trotz should have a lot of confidence in the fact that he's got a number of NHL players and solid, good NHL players in the pool. I think Tanner Mullendijk is going to be a top 4 defenseman in the NHL. Top 4 defenseman in the NHL nowadays make $6-7 million, and I think that's what he's capable of getting to. I look at David Edstrom as a potential middle 6C. I look at Matthew Wood as a potential top nine scoring winger. Matthew has to work on his pace of play and his skating. That's always been the concern with Wood. But as far as the ability to shoot it on the power play and the skill for a 6'4" player, that's all there for Matt Wood. Then you go to Fedor Svechkov, who they had this year, and Zachary Rourou, who started to make a dent on the NHL roster, and even guys like Joachim Kemmel, who are coming, and Teddy Stiga, who I mentioned. And there's a lot of guys who should be good players, who should be top nine players or top six defensemen. They still are missing that true, true premium prospect, though. You look around the league, they don't have, say, an Ivan Demidov like the Montreal Canadiens do. They don't have a Sam Dickinson like the San Jose Sharks do, or a Will Smith, or a Macklin Celebrini like the San Jose Sharks do. They don't have an Artem Levshunov like the Chicago Blackhawks do, or a Ziv Boyum like the Minnesota Wild do. So they're missing that true, true star prospect still. But very, very deep group, strong group of young players. They're going to help sort of insulate the forward group, especially for the Preds moving forward. But that's why a player like Higgins, I think, is so important that they land him. And maybe Porter Martone's that guy too. But Higgins being a center, being a high skill guy, that immediate star prospect within the system, the kind of guy who could be a first line player rather than a middle six player, that just changes the look of the prospect pool a little bit. So that's why I think there's a natural fit for Higgins there.
Scott Wheeler is with us from The Athletic. We're talking about the Predators and the upcoming NHL draft, their prospect pool. Scott, first, thank you for all your great coverage on this. This really helps us in a city like Nashville, where we're removed, where all these guys play, you know, and so you're putting a face and a name to these guys. So, Scott, I think a lot of Predator fans were really distraught when they dropped down in the lottery. It didn't go up or didn't stay. Where do you put the threshold of where you can get somebody who has a chance to be one of those elite premium talents, as you just characterized? And is number five still in that range?
Yeah, I think number five still is in that range. I have the top of the draft divided into three tiers. There's a group of two at the top, led by Matthew Schaefer and Michael Misa. I think those are the two best players at their positions, the best defenseman and the best forward in the class. I think Misa, as great as James Higgins and others are, I think Misa distinguished himself with his 134-point goal per game, 2 points per game season in the OHL this year. He's a 6'1" center who has all of the skill and playmaking and feel and smarts that a player like James Higgins has, but does it at 6'1" instead of at 5'10", 5'10 and a half kind of thing. And then there's that second group for me and for most scouts that includes about four more players. And those players are Higgins, who I mentioned off the top, Porter Martone, who I mentioned, and then Anton Frundell and Caleb Desnoyers, two other centers. Frundell's a big, heavy 6'1" center. Desnoyers is the first line center for the Moncton Wildcats, who are one of the Memorial Cup favorites and are in the midst of the QMJHL final at the moment. Very, very smart, committed two-way center who projects as a top six center in the NHL. So you've got that group of three centers, Higgins, Frundell, and Desnoyers, a top winger in Porter Martone, and that's sort of your core group of six at the top. Now, that group of six could be disrupted by a couple of other players who are kind of in that third tier that I mentioned. So Jake O'Brien, who I mentioned earlier, is a center with the Brantford Bulldogs, who I think has a chance to go in the top six, seven picks. Brady Martin is a center, ultra-competitive center with the Sioux Greyhounds, who has a chance to go in that sort of top six or seven group and disrupt it a little bit. So even if they'd slip to number eight or number nine, I still think there's a chance they could have got that kind of a talent. Obviously, with the lottery only being two draws now, they were only eligible to slip a maximum of two spots, which they did. But I still think at five, you're not just in the middle of that group with an option to pick one or two players, but there will quite likely be three or four of those guys available to you to select from. So still in a very advantageous position, still going to get a top prospect. Will they get Matthew Schaefer or Michael Misa there? No, but that next group is a legit group as well.
Why do you think that Higgins? I got two more questions for you, Scott. I know your time is limited here, so we really appreciate you coming on with us to sort of set the table with this. Why do you think Higgins' stock has dropped a little bit? Because I think for a while I was seeing him more in that top tier.
Yeah, there's a mix of factors. Part of it is just that he didn't have a great season in college hockey, and we've seen some great seasons by draft-eligible players in the last couple of years, and I think that skewed what the expectations might have been for a player like James Higgins. We saw Macklin Celebrini and Adam Fantilli put up 60-plus points in college hockey. James Higgins had 37 and 37, was still a top player on his team, a top six player on Boston College, who were one of the best teams in the country this year, led the American World Junior team in ice time by forwards to win a gold medal, was very good at the World Juniors in that role, scored a couple of big goals at the World Juniors, including a pivotal wraparound goal that he stuffed, is the reigning and current record holder for most points at U18 Worlds, which he set a full year ago in Finland. A year before that, he set the U17 world scoring record. So we're still talking about a high-end player, but there were some games this year where he just didn't dominate, where he blended in a little bit more than a Macklin Celebrini did or an Adam Fantilli did when they played in college at the same age, especially games against bigger opponents. I remember a weekend series coming out of the World Juniors against Merrimack College, a really heavy, big team in college hockey, where he just struggled to get to the inside, and that raised some questions with teams about all of the talent in the world, all of the skating in the world, but is he going to be able to score a ton and get to the net and get to the dirty areas a ton in the NHL as a 5'10.5", 5'11" center? There are some who think he may end up on the wing, as is always a conversation when you're a smaller center. I don't believe that. I think James Higgins is a center in the NHL all day. I think he's competitive enough. I think he's in the fight enough. And then he certainly has the skill and the skating to play that position and make his line mates better. But he just didn't blow the doors off of his draft year, if you will. He didn't have the kind of season that a Celebrini or a Fantilli did. And as a result, he sort of fits into that top five conversation more than he does the first overall conversation. Now, in saying that, could he go first overall because of the unique set of circumstances with it being the Islanders and with him being a Long Island kid who grew up an Islanders fan, and their desire to have a player like that within their organization, especially after they lost John Tavares, the last first overall pick that they had, to free agency. The idea of keeping James Higgins and not having to worry about that, and James Higgins being an Islander for life, all of that is, I'm sure, enticing to them, but he still fits more into that 2, 3, 4, 5 conversation, I think, than he does the first overall conversation for most teams.
All right, here's the last one. Scott, the Predators will have three picks somewhere between around 24 and 35, 36, if my math is right. So three picks and about a dozen towards the end of the first round and the top of the second round. As you look at the draft as a whole, what are we looking at in that area? And as a goalie, maybe in that equation, given the fact that the Predators really don't have the long-term next goalie in the chain?
Yep, I think that's absolutely the case. Joshua Ravensbergen is the he could go in that late first, early second round range. I did my mock at The Athletic this week and sort of mentioned that I think Ravensbergen's a potential fit for the Predators with their late first round pick. Obviously, they traded away Yaroslav Askarov because he wasn't on the right timeline to align with UC Soros. By moving from a 22-year-old Askarov to an 18-year-old Ravensburg, and suddenly that lines up with what the end of Soros' next contract will be in terms of when you would expect a goaltender like Joshua Ravensbergen to enter into the league. So I think Ravensbergen is absolutely within the realm of the candidates that they'll be considering there. As far as the draft on the whole in that range, not a great year. I was just at U18 Worlds in Texas, and I can say that it was the sort of least talented, least compelling U18 Worlds that I've covered to date. This isn't a great draft class. I like those top six guys that I mentioned. There are still going to be star players that come out of this draft class. There are still going to be even transformative players for their clubs that come out of this draft class. But we've been spoiled the last couple of years. 2023 and 2024 were excellent drafts. This draft doesn't have that same depth into the, not just outside of the top 10, but outside of the top 30 kind of thing. There will still be good players drafted in that range and players who play in the NHL for a long time picked in that range. But I don't think you're looking at game changers or high impact types. I think in the late first and early second in this draft specifically, you're just hoping to get guys that will play for you.
Scott Wheeler of The Athletic, NHL, joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick talking the NHL draft. Scott, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
Cheers. Anytime, guys.
Scott Wheeler joining us on the program. 615-737-1025. Speaking of rookies, the Titans rookies are taking the field today and tomorrow for rookie minicamp. What are some things worth focusing on other than Cam Ward? We'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Nashville's best deal of the week is celebrating National Barbecue Month. Get a $50 gift card to Central Barbecue in Capitol View for half off right now. Try their new barbecue sampler, ribs, wings, and barbecue sliders. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals right now while supplies last.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you paint yourself into a picture of being head over heels in love with this receiving core. Like, Calvin Ridley is a pretty clear sort of number two wide receiver in most offenses. They still don't really have the number one guy. Tyler Lockett looks like he's very much into the decline of his career. If you look, like, the Titans have a history now of being the last stop for a receiver about to call it a career. You know, Randy Moss, Titans legend, right? That kind of thing. Tyler Lockett could easily be the next one of those guys. Like, I love Tyler Lockett. He's had an incredible career, but he looks like he's pretty close to being done. It's kind of hard to imagine him having a bounce back season in Tennessee with a rookie quarterback at the helm and et cetera. So you're talking Calvin Ridley, who's got a ceiling as a number two, Tyler Lockett, who's on the way down and is probably a number three. Then you've got that mix of, well, who's going to step up and be the other guy? Is it going to be Ayamanor right off the bat? Are they going to get something out of Treylon Burks, a former first round pick? Van Jefferson is there. They've added another couple of rookies, including Cam Ward's favorite college receiver, Xavier Restrepo, is an undrafted free agent who,
like that,
you know, a slot guy only, who ran a 4.8, but gets open, makes plays, right? Is a football player despite horrific workout numbers. So, I mean, look, there's some players to throw to, but overall, this looks like a weakness, I think.
That was Sam Monson of the 33rd team breaking down the Titans' receiving core. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. We were just talking about future NHL rookies. The Titans' rookies are on the field for rookie minicamp today and tomorrow at St. Thomas Sports Park. And of course, a lot of people are going to be paying attention to Cam Ward because, of course, he will be there. And I agree with what Jared said yesterday at the top of Stillman & Company about making sure, to borrow a line, Willie, that we hear oftentimes in hockey dressing rooms, don't get too high, don't get too low when it comes to Cam Ward in rookie minicamp, because the Titans are sure to post a video to social media that is slickly, I guess you could say, slickly produced. And Cam Ward's going to uncork a beautiful pass, and the camera's going to zoom in on the football, and it's going to go into slow motion, and you're going to be able to see every little bit of that spiral, and it's going to be a perfect spiral. And then it's going to speed up right as it catches Xavier Restrepo's hands.
And you're going to think Warren Moon.
Right. And there are going to be Titans fans that quote tweet that post and say, coming soon, week one, 2025. Don't do that. Don't do that. Again, don't get too high. Don't get too low with what you see in rookie minicamp. But the reason I wanted to play that clip from Sam Monson and talk about Titans rookie minicamp is Nick Suss wrote an article at the Tennessean earlier this week, three things at Tennessee Titans rookie camp worth focusing on more than Cam Ward. And I want to discuss the wide receiving group. Nick Suss writes, quote, Titans coach Brian Callahan said he expects Elik Iomanner, the fourth round pick out of Stanford, to begin his career at the X position, which is the wide receiver spot most associated with being the end man on the line of scrimmage. Chimere Dike, his fellow fourth-round pick, is someone Callahan says will be able to rove between all three receiver spots, and the team is going to have to figure out where he fits best. Nick Suss also notes that Xavier Restrepo, 90% of his snaps last year at Miami came from the slot. He then writes, Calvin Ridley primarily played on the outside last year, despite his size. So did free agent add Tyler Lockett and fellow free agent add Van Jefferson. Ridley and Lockett are versatile enough to move inside as needed, but it stands to reason that the rookie receiver who can make the biggest difference in the slot is the one who will have the clearest path to early playing time. Derek Mason, our resident wide receiver, as you analyze these young wide receivers, DK, Io Manor, and Restrepo, who, according to Nick Suss, do you think has the clearest path to early playing time? Who can make the biggest difference in the slot?
Oh, man. Yes, you would throw Restrepo in there. But listen, playing a slot in college and playing a slot in the NFL is totally two different things, okay? So you got to be able to – those holes are not as wide as they were in college. And those guys are closing very fast. And that's something Cam Ward is going to have to realize as well. So I think you would name him first off because they have history. They have a bond already built, he and Cam Ward. But I'm looking at guys like Tyler Lockett. You know, if you're talking about that slot, he's, to me, he's going to be the guy outside of some of these rookies, because he may not have the speed that he once has, but he has the knowledge to play the game. And a receiver, a young quarterback doesn't need speed necessarily. He needs someone that, one, catches the football and know how to play the game and sees exactly what he's seen. So when it comes to, you know, take speed out of the window, because what helps a young quarterback is somebody that's going to catch the ball, be where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there, and that has nothing to do with speed. So that's why I'm looking at a guy like Tyler Lockett. Is a guy that can come in there and solidify himself as that slot guy. Now, don't forget about, you know, guys that have already that's been there as well, Bryce Oliver, Jaquan Jackson, guys like this are guys like that that are still going to be in the mix. But DK, he has a chance. You know, it's good for a rookie to come into the Tennessee Titans this year. Why? Because outside of Calvin Ridley and Tyler Lockett, there's not much. And Vance Jefferson does have some experience, but these guys have caught a lot of balls, and they played in a lot of big games, meaning Calvin Ridley and Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett more than Calvin Ridley, I understand that. But you come into a situation where there's not many pass catchers or guys that have caught a lot of passes in this sport. So you come in as a rookie, you have an opportunity right away to play. So because, like you said, this is not a deep position on this team. This is one of the weakest. If you talk, if you're talking about numbers, snaps, experience, this is one of the weaker positions they have on this team, and they got a lot of them.
Willie, outside of Cam Ward, which Titans rookie draftee, or you could throw Xavier Restrepo or any other undrafted free agent signing in there, outside of Cam Ward, is there a rookie that intrigues you most as the Titans start rookie minicamp today and tomorrow?
Well, I want to build on what D-Mace just pointed out. If from afar, and based on the clip that we just played, which I can't really disagree with, they're going to have to prove that they're better than people think they are. The receiving core right now, I think this would be the ideal spot to come in as a Drew Bennett type. Like, that's the ideal wide receiver story from Titans history, and unfortunately, there's not many more. Drew Bennett is kind of in a class by himself, an undrafted free agent who came in and immediately came in and made an impact and turned into a really, really good player on a really good team. I'm a little surprised they only brought in one wide receiver. I would think the wide receivers around the league would be lining up to try out for the Titans, because this is the land of opportunity, right?
Yeah, there's no.
I mean, I know they drafted two guys, but still, they didn't draft anybody until the fourth round. If I'm a wide receiver, I'm like, I'm better than that guy. Calvin Ridley's their best guy. How old is Tyler Lockett? Van Jefferson, who is he? I'm signing up. So I'm a little surprised they only brought in one other guy, or other wide receivers who are free agents weren't angling to say, hey, can I get in with Tennessee?
I'm surprised they didn't draft one higher, considering the lack of pass catchers they have on their team.
Well, expect that.
Yeah.
Before they traded their original second round pick, number 35, We talked about Luther Burden. Mm-hmm. We talked about other receivers who could be available at 35.
The other kid that, from Utah State,
right.
Jalen, and what was the kid's name? Because both of them were
Jalen Noel.
Yeah, Jalen Noel. Because he was the second pick of.
There was Jaden Higgins.
He was drafted before him
right.
by the same team.
And by the way, received a fully guaranteed contract, making him the first second-round pick in NFL history to have a fully guaranteed contract.
Well, that's how much they think of him.
The Houston now Texans.
Yeah, Houston Texans drafted both of them. And that's what sort of, you know, it bogs my mind a little bit about this. Because you drafted as if you had two bona fide studs at wide receiver. Or your passing game is just an elite passing game. That's how you drafted when it came to pass catchers. You see what Houston did. They drafted back-to-back. Why? Because they want to improve their quarterback. They want to help improve his development. Why? Because one of his receivers are down or may not be back. So what they do? They went out and got two of them. Second and they drafted them both in the second round or second and third round.
Noel was a third round pick.
Yeah, second
he was
and third round.
Number 79 overall. Higgins was round two, number 34.
So I hope they know exactly what they're doing. Because
they had so many holes. It's like a big piece of Swiss cheese with all these holes, right?
No, I understand that, but I'm saying
it's one thing if you've got the one hole that you're targeting in a draft and you can hit it mm-hmm. with two or three guys early. If wide receiver is one of just a couple holes, you can address that. But I think that's why they did it. And, of course, who was on the board. But I get what you're saying, D-Mace, but I think the reason is pretty clear, right? They just don't have enough good players
in a
lot of places.
And I get that. But, you know, obviously they are going the route which I talked about yesterday, I believe, where they're trying to bolster up this defense a little bit more than what they did. That's why they chose to use their second and third round pick on defensive guys. Now, they may have gotten a steal out of the third round pick, the safety out of Penn State. It's pretty good.
Kevin Winston.
Yes. But maybe they are choosing to do it the way we talked about yesterday. Put more of the emphasis really on the defense. And then you have some veteran pass catchers. Does it seem like an explosive offense? Probably not. We'll see once they get into camp and then once they get into games. But I think he's trying to build up the defense a little bit more and just get the offense a little bit better. But again, you drafted or you went through free agency as if you had bona fide guys like outside of Calvin Ridley. You don't have guys that have proven themselves. Outside of Ridley and Tyler Lockett, which he came
so
in later.
So does it surprise you that more undrafted free agents didn't seek the Titans
exactly,
out?
Exactly, yeah. Like, why aren't they – like, if I'm an undrafted free agent, this is where I'm trying to go. Because you have a legitimate shot of being one of the top five receivers. I don't know. They may keep six. Top six receivers. One of the top six receivers on this team. You have an opportunity as a rookie. And I believe Restrepo will make – I believe he will make the roster.
Let's continue this conversation on the other side. 615-737-1025. Titans rookie minicamp today and tomorrow. What are you most looking forward to other than Cam Ward? Because we know that a lot of you are excited about Cam Ward. Outside of Cam Ward, what are you most looking forward to about Titans rookie minicamp today and tomorrow? 615-737-1025. The 615 Open Charity Golf Tournament benefiting Folds of Honor presented by Gary Force Acura at Hermitage Golf Course is on Thursday, May 29th. Sign up to play or sponsor at 615open.com.